You're listening to The Kevin O'Connor Show. That's coming up next. Welcome back to another episode of The Kevin O'Connor Show. Here with me again today will be Tom Haverstraw from Yahoo Sports. We're talking about teams and whether they should panic or not. The Celtics, the Timberwolves, the Warriors, the Nick Richards trade with him heading to the Phoenix Suns and a bunch else. Let's get to it. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show here with Tom Haverstraw. Let's play a game, Tom. Panic meter. We're going to talk about some teams that are in iffy situations right now. I'm going to ask you, is it time to panic? And you're going to give me three answers. I'm chilling, I'm sweating, or sound the alarms, all right?
All right, let's do it.
All right, let's start out with the Boston Celtics. They are 28-12 on the season, second seed in the East. Everything looks great if you just glance at the standings. But over the last month, they're 7-7. And ever since they've started integrating Kristaps Porzingis back into the lineup, their defense with him on the floor has really struggled. 112.5 defensive rating, a team worst of all rotation players. Doesn't seem like he's moving quite the same way he did pre-injury, but it's not just him. The point of attack defense is not the same from the guys you'd expect it from. Is the defense bored? Is it tired? If they're bored, they're the defending champions. If they're tired, I mean, it's also indicated on offense. 25th over the last month with a 34% three-point percentage. The offense feels stagnant. They're falling into old bad habits. Maybe there's a me first, disease of more type of issue. Regardless, 7-7 in the last month, Tom. Is it time to panic about the Boston Celtics?
I'm going sweating here, KOC, and it's not like Patrick Ewing in a game seven sweating, but it's more like Boston Celtics are going to have to figure out a way to get positive minutes out of Kristaps Porzingis. It's really weird. If you look at the numbers this season, KOC, when he's on the floor, the Celtics have a negative net rating. It's negative 0.9 this season, meaning every 100 possessions that Kristaps Porzingis is on the floor with the Boston Celtics, they're actually getting outscored in those minutes per 100 possessions. Now, what is that from? You mentioned the defense and that the defensive rating has not been great when Kristaps Porzingis was moved back into the starting lineup. He's been in and out. When he is in the starting lineup, the Celtics are 5-5. And what's fascinating about it is that when he's on the floor, the Celtics have given up more threes than they've actually made, which is absurd. The Celtics are a team that are built to win the math game, that we are going to shoot more threes than you, we're going to make more threes than you, and you're not going to be able to survive the math problem. But the math problem is going the other way when Porzingis is on the floor. When he's on the floor, the Celtics have made 155 three-pointers, and the opponent has made 169, a minus 14 differential in the three-point column when Porzingis is on the floor. Now, you can look at that and just say bad luck. It's just random noise. It's something that will even out as the season goes on. But if you're asking the question, am I panicking about the Boston Celtics? The answer is no. I'm not hitting the panic button, but it is interesting to me that the Porzingis addition doesn't seem like much of that. Like, they're better with Al Horford at the five this season. And the question for me is that like symptomatic of something within this team that they're just not right working Kristaps Porzingis back? They're 5-5 with him in the starting lineup with their big four. I don't know. This is a puzzling team right now. It could be a midseason funk that they're just hitting a little bit of a wall here. Jaylen Brown just hasn't been able to be a great three-point shooter recently. Really slid in that department.
Forgot how to dribble again, Tom. I mean, he's back and just like he dribbles the ball in the middle of the floor, and you're sounding the alarms as a Celtics fan when he's dribbling the ball in the middle of the floor right now.
That's right. That's right. And that's where you hit the panic button there, is that's not what they want to do offensively, right? But it just is, it's odd, isn't it? Like, the idea was, all right, once they get KP back, they're going to be fine. It's going to, you know, wait till you see that. But that starting line, their best starting lineup, last season it was 28-9, and this year it's 5-5. And something has to click better.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not sounding the alarms about the Celtics. I'm not even sweating. I'm still chilling with the Celtics. Okay. We've seen this play out before they won a championship. They're a team that this is the habits that they have. Sometimes when their backs are against the wall, that's when they perform at their best. They perform at their best when they're facing adversity. Udoka gets fired. they come out and have a big start to the season. They get challenged right now. Maybe we're about to see that happen again. Every December, it feels like the Celtics team goes through this lull. And I think that's just reflective of Tatum and Brown, the best players, who they are as leaders. And that's not to criticize them by any means. It is not. Performing, I mean, they're 28-12, and they're coming off of a championship, a long summer for a bunch of these guys, Derek White, Drew Holiday, and Jason Tatum, going to play for Team USA in the Olympics and winning gold. And of course, Tatum didn't play much, but he's still part of those practices, still part of those teams. Now, I I'm chilling right now with Boston. I'm not overreacting. But there, of course, are some little things you see and you're like, like, could this be something? And I think the Porzingis stat you mentioned is really, really interesting. I did not realize that they had given up more made threes than they had made in his minutes as a starter. That's interesting.
I mean, and I think that is. They have more threes, like, by a mile than their opponent. But that equation really tilts in the wrong direction when he's out there. And that might be a sense of hope, is that, like, three-point variance. If you're looking at a silver lining, it's like, that can't continue. The opponent shooting over 40% with Porzingis out there, and maybe the math just evens out in the end, and statistically it's just a real quirk that will even itself out in the rest of the season.
I think it probably is a quirk. I mean, with Porzingis, like, there's a play again. They lost to the Raptors on Wednesday night, and the Raptors are a terrible team. You shouldn't be losing to Toronto, even though it's in Toronto. And Porzingis, you know, he has a play early in the fourth quarter. Scotty Barnes just kind of scoots around him. And it's like, really? Like, Porzingis isn't offering enough resistance at the rim to alter that shot. And I think there's stuff out there where you're like, maybe he just doesn't have the same agility in those small spaces that he did at the beginning of last season, or even his year with the Wizards, where he was all-star caliber. And that's a real possibility, and that does limit what he could be for this Boston team if that's the case. But it's also tough to integrate a guy who's a seven-footer in the middle of the season. Like, that's a hard thing to do, so I'm willing to give that time and see how it plays out for him individually and for the team collectively as they play together. To me, and I've said this on the pod before, I'm just worried about the fact that for the full season, they're 15th in three-point percentage. Like, maybe there is a tired legs element for this team, where they make a deep run, playing the way that they do, launching as many threes as they have this over the past couple of years. They're still number one in the NBA in attempts. Last year, they're number two in percentage. This year, they're in the middle of the pack. And so there's a huge difference in what your offense can be when taking three-pointers is the bedrock of this offensive system. And if you're average at doing it, that it's just not going to work at the same level, especially when over the past month, again, like, they started off hotter. Over the past month, 7-7, they're 24th in three-point percentage. Is this a tired legs thing? Well, that would be concerning, but that's not going to play out until the season develops more often. Now, Drew Holiday's numbers are down from last year, down from what they were in Milwaukee. He's shooting closer to what he was earlier in his career with Philly and New Orleans. Derek White's shot has slipped as of late. You mentioned Jaylen Brown's dribbling. Just feels like a team that's not playing with the flow that we've seen, but that's largely rooted just in the simple fact that the results of their offense, with everything that they do, is just resulting in a lot more missing from the three-point line than it was prior.
Let me ask you this. What would it take for you to move into the sweating column? What would it take for you to perspire a little bit about the Boston Celtics?
Yeah, I think that it's simply this continuing into late January, early February. I just need to see them struggle a bit more. I feel like we've seen this story play out before. We've seen them have their backs against the wall. We've seen them respond. Even in the years that they fell short in the postseason, they've had these moments. And so I think for Boston, you know, the next few weeks, they have Orlando on Friday night. Next Monday, they face the Warriors. They have their West Coast road trip. Warriors, Clippers, Lakers, Mavericks. Some tough games, some easier games coming up over the rest of this month. If they lose more games against, like, the Mavs without Luka, if they lose against, you know, even the Warriors on Monday, as iffy as they've been, and we'll talk about them a little bit later, then the concern starts to build up. But we have seen a stretch the last 10 days. They've scored under 100 points three times. Three times! Just doesn't happen. Like when it happened, when OKC held them under 100, it was like, oh my God, OKC held them on under 100. What an amazing fourth quarter defense. But then the Kings did it. And then the Raptors did it.
That's crazy. And when you think about this, is it's all full squad. Like it's not like they've got no Tatum or Jaylen or Derek White in these games. It's absolutely full squad. And that's concerning.
It is concerning. And I think that's where sometimes like you look at this Boston team. I'd like to see a bit more offensive variety. I think with the 3-point shot is at an average level over this season compared to last year. Maybe a bit more KP post-ups, you know, maybe KP, like he's still scoring. The Celtics are scoring 1.3 points per Kristaps Porzingis post-up, even better than last season. But he's, as a team, they're only getting 5 or 6 a game. Maybe, you know, up that 2 or 3 more post-ups per game, maybe a little bit more, 2 big lineups, just some more variety maybe could help this team out midseason.
It's funny, when we started the season, it was all about Jason Tatum's reworked, revamped 3-point shot. We haven't heard much about that recently.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show, like, the first 3 games of a season, the same thing with Mikal Bridges, same thing with Russell Westbrook in Denver. Like, we like to think that the first 5 games of an NBA season is the whole story, but it is very merely like a half of a chapter of an 82-game schedule. So Jason Tatum's 3-point shot still not at, like, that top-tier level yet.
So you're sweating a little bit. I'm still chilling with Boston. Up next, let's talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves. They were 6-6 this season. They were 10-10. They were 17-17. And right now they're 21-19. But over this recent stretch, they've had losses to the Warriors, the Grizzlies, the Celtics, and the Thunder. And their upcoming schedule has more tough games as well. They face the Knicks, Cavs, Grizzlies, Mavericks, Nuggets, Hawks, and Suns. Woo! So Minnesota, they've beaten bad teams, they've lost to some competitive teams, and they have a lot of those coming up. And then you have Anthony Edwards, after their loss to the Warriors on Wednesday, he comes out and says, the starting 5, we are terrible. Every game we come out, low energy, and the second group comes in and gives us energy. I would say the starting group got to come out with more energy, like we want to play the game of basketball, like we love the game. Tom, is it time to panic about the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Yes. Smash that panic button. Ooh. If you look at the body language of Julius Randle, who's like MVP of body language talk, right? This guy is always in the body language talk. Doesn't have the great energy, even with the Knicks, that you want out of your star player, or a guy who's been all NBA star player. At the end of that game against the Warriors, who was the only player on the Minnesota bench that was sitting during the last 5 minutes of the game? It's Julius Randle. I'm not talking about that he went to the bench and he wasn't playing on the floor. I'm talking about every other player on that Timberwolves team was standing up. Mike Conley was practically on the floor the entire, you know, crunch time against the Warriors. And there
with a comeback, because they had a comeback. There was good energy. They're coming back in the game. Exactly.
Great energy. And he's sitting there doing this whole thing, like looking around his teammates who are standing, because he couldn't see the game because he was sitting there with the towel over his shoulder and sulking. You know, this guy, he was benched like 5 minutes left in that fourth quarter. They rallied back. Naz Reid had some amazing plays. He had a big mistake in losing Stephen Curry down the stretch.
If Julius Randle did that,
we wouldn't hear the end of it. We wouldn't hear the end of it. But Naz Reid gets the switch.
Tom, that made me so sad. It ruined so many of the good moments Nas had. He just had a big brain fart. How does he forget Stephen Curry?
Just like gets a switch, right? And they're like, the Warriors are like, this is exactly what we want. We want a big having to trail Steph Curry around the corner. Oh, wait, he's gone. And he hits it right before. Like, that was the big, like, highlight, right, was the viral moment of Steph Curry talking to the fan in the stands. It was because Nas just lost him, just totally forgot. Oh, yeah, that's my guy. And you saw Ant just go, come on. Like, you lost him. But look, I think it's over. I think the Julius Randle era in Minnesota is just about over. When you look at the last play of the game, they had to bring back the guys onto the floor because it was, you know, there was still a little bit of time left. But who had already left by then? Julius Randle. He was the first guy to leave, and he was already out of the arena by the time the game had ended. He left before the play had stopped. So you look at this. Julius Randle has been on the bench for clutch time two out of the last six times they've had clutch games. He's played only 40% of the Minnesota Timberwolves clutch minutes since December 31st. They've already made the signals. You've already heard Ant Edwards talk about how we need more energy. We're getting killed in the starting lineup. I think it's over. I think Julius Randle, if it doesn't happen in the next game, Chris Finch is already thinking about making a starting lineup switch and moving Naz Reid into the starting lineup in place of Julius Randle. Something, KOC, we've been talking about all season long, as I don't know how the Minnesota Timberwolves are going to last as a title contender with Julius Randle starting over Naz Reid. And it seems like Finchie is looking at this situation by playing Naz Reid the last 17 minutes of that game and saying, you know what? He might be our guy instead of Julius Randle.
I mean, look, Finch is, you know, he's throwing darts, trying to figure this out, and got to credit him. He puts DiVincenzo in the starting lineup over Conley as of late. Conley, like, all due respect, he's had an awesome career, but he's 37 years old. He looks done. He can't get into the paint anymore. He just can't create for others in the same way that he has before. 36% from three is, like, not horrible, but it's below average. And with his other limitations on the floor, he needs to be way above 40%. So DiVincenzo coming along, that's a good thing for them. Yep. And you said it. They need to replace Randle in that starting five. They have to. And I thought the stat you shared about 40% of his minutes in clutch time, the time he does play in the clutch against that Memphis team over the weekend, under a minute left, ISO against Jaren Jackson Jr. and Julius Randle with the dubious handles, to quote Walt Frazier. What are you doing? Going at Jaren Jackson Jr. with those dubious handles. Oh my God. Like, if I'm a Timberwolves fan, I'm screaming at the TV, because it happens time and time again with him where he just gets this blinders on and he doesn't see anybody else out there. It's just him and the ball in the rim. He doesn't even see the defender in front of him sometimes. That's Jaren Jackson Jr. Make a play for your teammates. And that's why it's moments like that. That's why Chris Finch is opting for others in those late game situations over Randle. And it's the right choice. Randle might be starting these games, but he's not finishing a lot of these games.
And that's how you know. That's how you know. Like,
exactly.
It's coaches have always told me, like, it's not about who you start, it's about who you finish. And I think you've seen time and time again as of late, over the last few weeks, Finch is deciding Julius is not my guy.
Yes, and they need to move him. They have to find a way to move him. Have to.
And that's the problem here is, like, how do you move him? You know, it's the same Jimmy Butler situation in a sense where it's like his trade value right now is an all-time low. He's going into a free agency year. And if you're Julius Randle and you're acquiring that guy, he's going to want to make his money back, right? He's going to want to get into a situation where he has an ability to show that, look, I'm the guy. I can be that guy for your team. But how many teams are looking to add that energy that Finch has already decided, like, I'm going Naz Reid? And look,
awful.
I am smacking the panic button here, but they do have a great option in Naz Reid. Like, he's awesome to replace Julius Randle. The writing's on the wall. Question is, who's going to take on Julius Randle? And what's interesting to me is that trade, Dante DiVincenzo, Julius Randle, and the Detroit first round pick coming from the Knicks for Cat. That Detroit first round pick, lottery protected, kind of looks pretty good right now, doesn't it? Because the Detroit Pistons are going to be, you know, in the playoffs if Cade Cunningham and the supporting cast continue to play this way. That's going to be a first-round pick that Minnesota can trade this offseason if they want to move Julius Randle somewhere and entice another team to take on that energy of Julius Randle. What about the Raptors? Bruce Bowen? Chris Boucher? Those salaries match? Maybe you toss in that Detroit pick and just to entice Toronto to make that move. I don't know, but that seems like Toronto with the veterans on their team. That's one team I would be calling and saying, like, look, you take in Julius Randle. I know he's not going to be part of your long-term plans, but we'll kind of give you a sweetener here. And I don't know if the Minnesota Timberwolves would do that deal, but I do like those pieces better than what Julius Randle's bringing them.
I'm intrigued. Bruce Brown would be really a nice fit. He's the anti Julius Randle.
Did I say Bruce Bowen? Like Spurs? Spurs Bruce Bowen? Do you think he would be better right now for the Timberwolves?
Bruce Bowen at what, age 50? How old is Bruce Bowen right now? Bruce Bowen.
That's what it's come to,
53
KOC.
53 years old.
That's what it's come to.
Come on down, Bruce Bowen. Yeah. But yeah, I think Bruce Brown, that's a good target for Minnesota. But with Randall, I think you're right. There's an element of he has a player option for next season. He probably wants long-term stability. I got to get mine. But it's not just Randall in this situation. Like, even if you were to, say, flip him for Bruce Brown and get this gritty, hard-nosed defensive player, switchable, versatile, selfless, cutter, mover without the ball, even if you add that guy to the team, like, there's still concerns with Minnesota. There's still, like, Anthony Edwards is in a situation this year. He's talked about, and I think it's fair to criticize him for complaining about how much he gets double teamed. He's like, I don't want to play this style. I don't want to get doubled all the time. But to his credit, of the nearly 300 players to run 25 pick and rolls this season. So that's not a lot of pick and rolls. 25 pick and rolls this year. Of the nearly 300 guys to do that, Anthony Edwards ranks number one in the amount of times he's been blitzed. So that means teams have sent two at him 16% of the time in pick and roll. That's a stat provided me from Sports Radar. So that's number one in the NBA. In the pick and roll, Anthony Edwards is getting blitzed. Teams trying to take the ball out of his hands. You're a playmaker, not a scorer. That's what they're trying to turn him into. He has not been efficient in isolations this year. Of the top guys in the NBA with the most isolations, the two least efficient players are Julius Randle and Anthony Edwards. There's just a lot of spacing.
I think that's related, by the way. I think why are they blitzing Anthony Edwards so much is because teams want Julius Randle to go ISO.
And I think trading Randle helps, but I am also, you know, just smacking that panic button because I'm not sure just trading him solves everything. There's still a lack of depth in the team. You're still, like, with Mike Conley's decline, you're really, really needing Rob Dillingham to figure things out and come along. I feel like that Cat trade, it made some sense on the surface. The Dillingham trade on draft night made some sense as a big swing, but there's a lot of big ifs for this team that just made the Western Conference Finals, and I don't think just a Randall trade is going to solve everything, but it would help. And it might move me into the sweating category, but I'm not so sure this team is actually a contender again this year. And that's sad to say, because we were talking about Anthony Edwards as Michael Jordan less than a year ago.
Not next to Julius Randle. He's not.
But
what move can they make? You know, Rudy Gobert has a trade restriction for the season, so they can't move off of him. And if you trade Rudy Gobert, I know it's not like out of the question if he didn't have that restriction, if they would move off of Rudy Gobert. But
you
if
can't
you're,
trade him. Your defense falls apart. You can't do it.
That's the thing. You're kind of cornered between a rock and a hard place because Rudy Gobert makes so much sense for your team because you can't have Naz Reid at the five and still be a title contender without like elite defensive players at every other position. So you're kind of stuck with this formation of the team with Anthony Edwards and Rudy Gobert, kind of the same way that Donovan Mitchell in Utah was stuck. And the question becomes, if you move off of Rudy Gobert, you better be damn sure about the player that's coming in. Because Anthony Edwards, he likes to talk, right? He loved his time with Team USA. And I don't know how much longer he will be able to resist any sort of like making some real noise, some Jimmy Butler noise, if things don't turn around. Because right now it is panic time and they got to figure out a way to get that dude, Julius Randle, who's sitting on the bench, can't wait to leave the arena. And John Krasinski mentioning in his game story that he left well before all the reporters got in there, that he was leaving right after the game, just left. So they've got a problem on their hands there.
One more name for you, just off the top of my head. Did not think about this trade ahead of time. How about John Collins from the Utah Jazz as a name to try to swap for Julius Randle?
Go Deeks. I got my Muggsy Bogues jersey behind me. John Collins is having a career year, very efficient. He's a dunker. He's a guy who can shoot the three. I like that move for them. And the question becomes, you know, that makes them more exciting. Makes them, I think Utah would like to figure out a way to get, you know, Colin Sexton, John Collins, Jordan Clarkson, some sort of value back for those guys as Cooper Flagg comes down the pipe. So I do think that that makes a lot of sense for the Minnesota Timberwolves, is get a guy who's a little bit more dynamic and doesn't demand, you know, a high volume of ISOs like Julius Randle.
And for what it's worth, Colin Sexton, I think a pretty good chance that he's a guy that gets moved ahead of the deadline. Good chance of that. Let's take a quick break and then come back and talk about the Warriors and whether it's time to panic about them. All right, Tom. So the Golden State Warriors, what a weird week for them. You have Draymond Green telling Vinny Goodwill from Yahoo Sports about how bad teams are make these panic trades and trade future picks for guys who aren't going to help. You have Steve Kerr talking about it after Draymond's comments. Then Stephen Curry after the game says effectively the same exact thing on Monday night after they had their loss. And then they win on Wednesday, and it's, we're not giving up. We never said that. We never said that. Kerr comes out and says, oh, we never said we're giving up. We just said we don't want to give up the future. Well, if you don't want to trade your future picks to help with the present, that is not going all in to win now. So you have this Warriors team. They're 20-20. They've been really terrible since their fast start. Buddy Hield, he starts off looking like Klay. Now he looks like Buddy Hield. Is it time to panic about the Warriors, Tom?
This is a tough one. I just did a Skip Bayless, by the way. I did the whole like exhale, the dramatic exhale. It's weird because I would say panic, but it almost seems like they've already decided what they're going to do. It's like right off to the sunset. You know, like this team has already run its course and they feel like, you know what? We had a good run. Draymond Green, don't think it's a coincidence, KOC. Connecting the dots, keep my third eye open on this. Right after he has those comments about, and he and Steph Curry have those comments, the media parade about how they're not going to be desperate and trade the future for something that could be a mistake. We see this story about how Draymond Green could be retiring, considering retiring and moving into, you know, a media TV star. And I'm like, what is going on here in Golden State? All of these things that are happening all at once, it presumes to me that one or two things are happening. One is they've recognized that, like, they're not going to get back to that mountaintop again with this crew. That they've decided, look, we're going to ride this out and decide this is going to be the last formation, the last run, the last hurrah between Steph Curry and Draymond Green. Maybe that's what's happening. Or behind door number two is they have a big fish that they know is already coming this summer, that they already have those assets and those kids that they're going to trade Kuminga, and they're going to move all that good young players for a guy that Steph Curry and Draymond Green already know are going to be coming this summer. And it's not going to make sense to give away those assets for maybe Jimmy Butler when they got someone bigger that's coming down the pike. I don't know, but it does seem strikingly unlike Steph Curry to be like, not this competitive, like to just be checked out being like, yeah, I don't want another third star if it means giving up all these assets. It's very strange. And I wonder, KOC, I would say like panic button, I'm sweating a little bit only because it seems like this is heading for a divorce of some sense where Stephen Curry's looking at this like, I'm okay if we decide that like we're not going to compete at the highest level. And maybe they're laying down the track of like Draymond Green retiring or something, and that Steph Curry is going to say, please get me somewhere where we can compete. I want to go somewhere where I can compete at a high level, whether that's with the Spurs, like you wrote about in your great column this week, or whether it's with Denver. But it does seem like this is over. Like the Golden State Warriors as Steph Curry and Draymond Green being the face of the franchise and trying to win championships, it does seem like it's over.
It reminds me so much about Tom Brady's final year with the Patriots, where the Patriots were, you know, entering cap hell. It was going to be tough for them to make moves, improvements to the team. And Brady looks at this situation, you know, there's friction with Belichick at the time. He's wanting to still win. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to go. And he had an opportunity to sign with either the Buccaneers or the Chargers. He chose the Bucs. He played three more great seasons there, won another Super Bowl, his seventh, and he more than cemented himself as the NFL GOAT. He already was, in my opinion, after the fourth Super Bowl. But after the seventh, it's like, okay, even the haters at this point can't not acknowledge that this guy's the GOAT. And so Stephen Curry, you know, the thing was so weird about his comments about there's a responsibility to put the franchise in a better place than you left it. You did. You already did. Like, you could retire tomorrow. The franchise is in a much better place. You could trade all of those future first-round draft picks and never win again, and the franchise will still be in a better place than it was when you got there, right?
What is their franchise valuation right now? Is it like $9 billion? Didn't Laker buy it for like $600 million? So Steph Curry has made basically $8 billion or whatever it is for the Laker family, and like... The fan base has already had their amazing memories. Like, what does Steph Curry owe to anybody in this situation?
Nothing, nothing. So, like, Brady, he, you know, jersey still gets retired. Statue's still getting built. He's still a god in New England, even more of a god after winning somewhere else. If Steph were to leave and win somewhere else, every Warriors fan is going to be rooting for him. And if he were to win another one, it would only magnify his legacy in Golden State, even if it happens somewhere else. I think Brady's evidence of that. Now, I don't think Steph would ask for a trade. I don't think he would, considering how much him and his wife, Aisha, have built their life in the Bay Area. They have kids there. That's the only life they've known. They have their businesses there. I just can't imagine him leaving it. I think the inverse is more likely that he would retire a bit earlier than people might anticipate, even if he's still at the top of his game, including maybe after this next contract when it ends in 26, 27. I don't think Steph's going to ask out, but I think every action from the Warriors front office has been, we're fine if you do. In fact, it might actually be better for us if you do. Because you talk about leaving the franchise in a better place. What is a better place than like having all this success and then getting to trade you to get even more assets, like the Celtics did with Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett? And then that leads to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and another championship and years of success. That's what leads to sustained success, is the ability to trade Stephen Curry. So if Steph really believes what he's saying about, you know, leaving the franchise in a better place, asking for a trade accomplishes that this offseason, because this team will not win another title unless there's some, I don't know, like Giannis. Unless Giannis has come into Golden State, who is the other star that would actually position this team to win another championship with Stephen Curry and Draymond Green? I just don't think that guy actually exists this offseason. And don't tell me LeBron James. He's over 40, Tom.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right. Let's play this game out. Okay. So Steph Curry, let's just hypothetically say Steph Curry has a little list of teams that he would like, you know, hey, not saying trade me, but if there is a trade,
yeah.
I'd like these places. Is he coming home? Is he coming home to Charlotte?
No.
The Dwayne Wade move, where he's had his whole career with one franchise. He's going to have a statue, however horrendous and nightmare fuel it is. He'll have a statue in Miami, just like Steph Curry will outside of Chase Center. Does he go home for LaMelo Ball? I'm just throwing it out there.
No,
if you want to sell tickets, you want to keep Chase Center filled out, you want to build some assets for the future, maybe LaMelo Ball. They already passed on LaMelo Ball to get James Wiseman. Just saying.
Charlotte's not helping him win a title, though, Tom. He needs to be going for more. Like the quote I had in the story from Anscape, he told Anscape last year, it would mean everything to win a fifth championship. He talked about moving up the echelon. Bill Russell has 11. You'll never catch him. But Kobe with 5, Jordan with 6, Duncan with 5. He's talking about these guys. The only thing that's going to move Steph is winning more titles. Going home like to Charlotte, not going to accomplish anything regard.
His brother, Seth, and his father, Dell, is on the broadcast team.
Seth can go somewhere else. Seth.
come on, come on. I have an extra, you know, bedroom here that I can maybe house Steph Curry. I'm just trying to make this
story.
Happen.
It'd be a nice story. Right? But it's not going to lead to championships unless they have something else.
Okay. How about another big move? You mentioned Denver and San Antonio. I think Denver gives him the best opportunity to win a championship right now. Mm-hmm. But San Antonio would be really cool. I mean, Steph and Wemby right now, do you think that would be enough? And I'm assuming they would have to trade Steph Castle other way and some
it's
picks.
Do you think it's enough, Tom? No, they would have to get more. San Antonio, the rest of their roster's not there yet. Like to me, the other teams, like those are like fun ideas. Denver, less likely. San Antonio's not quite there yet, as fun as it would be. The Magic, the Rockets, even the Timberwolves.
Okay.
Somebody like that, you have an elite defense, and then Steph helps amplify that offense. That's where I look at it. And I'm like, maybe that could lead to titles.
Trying to see if the math works here. Fred VanVleet and Reed Shepard for Steph Curry. It's going to be close, the contracts. It's going to be close. You know, Houston said they don't have any expectation they're going to make a big move this season. But if they find out that Steph Curry might be just kind of, you know, ready for maybe a change, and the organization in San Francisco is ready for a little bit of a change, maybe accelerate the timetable of the post-Steph era. Reed Shepard, we've been talking about it all season long, how he has a huge, bright future. You get Steph 2.0 in Golden State? Come on. Come on, KOC. What a bridge that would be. That would be quite a story.
And for what it's worth, on this podcast, a couple of times I have said, oh, Steph can't be traded because of, you know, he signed the extension this offseason. That's incorrect. Steph could be traded ahead of the deadline because of the nature of his contract. So he could be. He does not have a trade restriction. Highly unlikely.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if it happened this year. I would be shocked if it really ever happens. But it's something he should think about. It's something he should think about because he still has something to offer. It could benefit the Warriors long term, and it does not negatively impact your legacy. Being a lifer is beautiful. Like Kobe, 60 points in his last game. Dirk finishing it out his career, passing the baton to Luka in his final career. There's something amazing about that, but I think it's overrated, man. I do. Like I grew up a hardcore Patriots and Celtics fan, and I don't think of Brady any less for leaving the Patriots. I think more of him for doing it. Like Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, I wish they could have won in Brooklyn. It did not change anything. Kobe he averaged 30 wins. The Lakers averaged 30 wins over Kobe Bryant's last 5 years. Dirk, like they had missed the playoffs time and time again. They averaged 35 wins over his last 5 seasons. Like Dirk was not like, and Dirk and Kobe were not the same level of player as Steph is. At this stage, Steph is way better at 36 than both Kobe and Dirk were. Way better. So I think Steph's more in that Tom Brady camp where I hope if the Warriors don't have that big move, I would hope that at least it's a strong consideration for him. And it would benefit the Warriors too. It really would.
I think it's interesting. Bob Myers leaves the organization. Most of the brain trust has been gone from, you know, peak Golden State Warriors era. And you're looking at a team that, or at least an organization. What if they look at the Lakers in those last Kobe years and that's worst case scenario for them? Like they look at that. We don't want that. We don't want what's behind that door. And so to me, when I see these quotes from Draymond and from Steph and then the news reports of Draymond Green and, you know, being a TV star just days after these quotes come out, it makes me feel like everyone's acknowledged this isn't going to be a long lasting partnership anymore. And they're not going to just have this where Steph is basically, you know, out there trying to carry this team just because it feels nostalgic to do that. But I think Kobe and Lakers fans would acknowledge that was tough to watch at the end there. And I feel like when you look at the Stephen Curry Warriors, I don't think that they want that where it's like he's carrying them to 20 wins every season. So I do think that like Denver's interesting. San Antonio, not looking at the contracts right now or what those proposed deals were, but I certainly think from an NBA perspective, having Stephen Curry back in title contention is what they need.
It'd be a beautiful thing if it happens. I like your Rockets idea. Van Vliet, Reed Shepard, a bunch of picks. Call them up, Raphael Stone. Call up the Warriors, offer a bunch of future picks, Van Vliet and Reed, and then you put it on Steph to say, I want to go there or not. I highly doubt it happens, but it would be pretty cool to see. Tom, we had a trade in the NBA. We'll talk about that in a minute. All right, Tom, we had a trade this week. Nick Richards is heading to the Phoenix Suns. They're finally getting a center. They're sending Josh Okogie and 3 second round draft picks, Denver's 26 and 31 second, and their own 31 second round pick. And in return, they're getting Nick Richards in a 2025 second from the Nuggets. I think for the Hornets, you're assembling more picks. It makes a hell of a lot of sense for them. Okogie's a fun young player with energy on defense. And for the Suns, this is a no-brainer. There was a stat posted by Sam Cooper from the Timeline Pod, a great Suns podcast over on X, and he said, Nick Richards last season had more dunks, 120, than Yusuf Nurkic and Mason Plumlee had combined in 1,000 fewer minutes. And he almost has as many dunks as both of them combined this season, too, for what it's worth, despite playing a mere cut of the time. Nick Richards has his issues. Suns fans are going to get frustrated by the way he bobbles passes, but he's an upgrade from Nurkic, who is out of the lineup at this point. He's an upgrade from Mason Plumlee, and he has far more experience than Oso Iguodoro, a rookie center. To me, this is a no-brainer deal for both sides and for the Suns. Finally, at least they get an upgraded center. What do you think?
It's all about 408. It's all about 408. That is the salary plus tax bill. $408 million that the Phoenix Suns were set to pay before this trade. $408 million in payroll and in tax. If you look at just the tax bill that they were looking at before this trade, it was more than 12 NBA teams' entire payroll. Okay, the tax bill, just the luxury tax penalties was going to be more than OKC, than San Antonio, than Charlotte. All of these teams had a lower payroll. Their entire roster was cheaper than the tax bill that Matt Ishbia was going to pay out for a team that's 19 and 20, tied with the San Antonio Spurs as of this taping in the standings. And if you doubled the Spurs payroll and then added $100 million to it, you would get to that amount that Matt Ishbia was going to pay for a 19 and 20 team. Again, same record, and twice plus $100 million, the payroll of San Antonio. So if you're looking at Phoenix and you're looking at, hey, is there anybody out there that we can acquire that not only makes sense from a financial standpoint, where now they shaved about $23 million off that tax bill by making this move? Because every dollar that you spend over the tax line, it's a multiplier effect. So it's not just a one-to-one equation. They're saving about $20+ million off the tax bill. They get his bird rights, I believe. And then Nick Richards is just better player than what they were giving out in the deal. And he's probably going to be their best starting center option on this team. And the Charlotte Hornets, they're like, we get some extra picks. And Musa Diabate has been awesome for them. And he's a great defensive player. Guy's bounced around, you know, before college and then in the NBA. He was over with the Clippers and then comes over to the Charlotte. And he's been good. And so I think they're looking at him and be like, why not? You know, if we're going to get value back for Nick Richards, strike now with a team that's desperate and they get some extra picks. And it's not a first rounder. It's not, these aren't going to be, you know, franchise changers, but they're lottery tickets. These are lottery tickets that, who knows, it could turn into a second round pick. I don't know. The Joker was a second round pick. Draymond was a second round pick. It could be, you know, something that pays off for them for the price of Nick Richards.
I mean, the Suns pick in 2031 could be the 31st pick in the draft. I mean, like, who knows where the Phoenix Suns will be at that point. So I think for them, Phoenix, their 2031 first that they still have is one of their only remaining assets. They have their first in 2031. They have that Nuggets second this year in 2025. but not a lot else. Like, I don't think you're going to be trading Ryan Dunn, who's been great defensively for you as a rookie. You're not going to be trading Oso, who has shown promise as a backup center this year. So your youth, you're not moving that. It's salary you're moving. Yusuf Nurkic, they've been trying like hell to move Nurk. He's getting paid this year $18 million, $19.4 million next season. They have not had any luck in doing that. That's why I think they moved to the Richards deal. I don't think it necessarily changes the fact that they want to move Nurkic, though. It just means that maybe you're not moving Nurkic for another center. Maybe it's a different position player. What I've heard is that those other teams, they don't want Nurkic. They'd rather have a Grayson Allen type. He is signed long-term on a very team-friendly contract for a guy with his energy, with his shooting ability. This season, Grayson Allen's making $15.6 million in the first year of 4 years remaining on his contract. So for Phoenix, you don't want to trade Grayson Allen either. He's a really good role player for your team. He's a good shooter. You don't want to move him. So they're in a situation now where over these next 3 weeks ahead of the deadline, there's still another move or two to be made. And the question is who's going to really want that pick way out in the future in 2031? And will the Suns keep that unprotected? Will they just try to swap it instead? It's all going to depend on what they get in return. But Phoenix isn't done here. Nick Richards isn't enough. They have another move to make that I think they eventually will make.
Is it the 2031 first? Isn't that the sweetener for the no trade clause with Bradley Beal? I feel like that's it.
Maybe. I would think so. I think you got to save it for that, right?
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
I don't think, unless you decide to keep Beal and then use it as a sweetener in the Nurkic deal. That, like, maybe you just end up not getting Jimmy Butler. And in that case, well, you're going to move forward with Book, KD, and Beal, and then you flip Nurkic and or Grayson Allen for something else. So I think for them, that is just the sweetener regardless of who the piece is that you end up getting. But they have to move Nurkic. They have to. Like, he's buried on the bench right now. You have a better center in Richards. Plumlee has performed better this season. You have to find something for him. If you're not going to be pulling the plug here, blowing things up, which is not happening.
I mean, that DeAndre Ayton deal where they give up to Monte Kamara in the draft, go over Portland, and then they have Grayson Allen and Nurk, and then they're going to move off of Grayson Allen. Like, that's a tough equation. To Monte Kamara could look really good in a Phoenix Suns uniform for this team. How hard he plays. I mean, you got Ryan Dunn and to Monte Kamara next to Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. I mean, come on. So this is a tough spot for Phoenix.
52nd pick in the draft. That's a good hit for the Suns. 52nd pick in the draft. And then you had
And Grayson Allen was really good for them last year. And he's moved to the bench under Mike Budenholzer. And they have a pretty good second unit, what it looks like right now with Grayson Allen and Bradley Beal. But this is not where they want to be. They're right now on the outside looking in of that top 10 in the Western Conference. If the season ended today, they would not be in the play-in tournament, which is astounding when you look at that payroll and the names on the back of the jerseys with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. I mean, I feel like you could put the Phoenix Suns in that panic meter and we would just be hammering that thing. There wouldn't be a button left after we were hitting that panic button with that salary. And the fact that Kevin Durant, it's only a matter of time. I just feel like it's only a matter of time before Kevin Durant's like, I'm not going to be sitting here watching the playoffs on my couch again. So we'll see what happens in the next month.
I mean, they don't belong in the panic meter thing because that's been done. Like, the button's been pressed over and over. It's not working anymore.
Yeah. It's like a Looney Tunes thing where you're just smashing it and then the spring comes out.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was interesting that Tim McMahon over on Hoop Collective podcast with Wendy and Bon Temps, he was talking about Phoenix and he says, well, the Rockets, they've expressed interest in Devin Booker. And then immediately the conversation turned to, well, there's no indication that's even going to happen. Like, it's just not going to happen. Wendy interjects, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, period. And I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon either. But the expression of interest, 1 year ago, there was the KD Houston stuff. Now it's the KD, the Booker Houston stuff. You have a team that's lurking around this Suns team that's struggling, waiting for the moment that KD or Book says, I've had enough. you've had enough. It's over. This isn't working here, Ishbia. Stop doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on this roster. It's done. That's ultimately the player's choice in this situation if they end up demanding a trade. And as someone like Houston's lurking, waiting for that opportunity. And it might actually come. I think this is the last year for this Suns team, unless they actually make a bit of a run. It's probably it, right? It's got to be.
And I think if you're Kevin Durant, just in the same way that OKC should have seen the writing on the wall and traded Kevin Durant before he walked, I think Phoenix has to figure out a way, like, how do we get value back for Kevin Durant while he's healthy at this age, rather than letting him basically, not be able to recoup some of the assets that you would get when peak Kevin Durant is playing like he is right now. So I think it's a lot more likely when you look at the Houston Rockets and the Phoenix Suns that Kevin Durant is the star that comes in that package than Devin Booker. I think they're going to continue to build around Devin Booker. He's young enough. He's a homegrown talent. And I just think that Kevin Durant, if they go on another slide here, even after the Nick Richards trade, we're not saying that he's a franchise savior or anything, but if you're making trades and still not changing the overall direction of the franchise, I think the Rockets were smart to build leverage and say, we're not going to trade this season. We're not looking to make a big deal, because the other teams on the other side of that call, they're going to be like, I know you don't want to trade your young guys or trade those assets, but what about this? And that just sets the negotiation at a much more favorable position if you're the Houston Rockets than if they were sending flyers out there or feelings out there, but that they really wanted to upgrade at the deadline. They would lose a lot of leverage. So I think it's smart play by Houston. And if Kevin Durant is available, I think they would go hard after him.
Last thing, Tom, earlier this week on my show, I had a mailbag question asking, hey, why did we all miss on Scoot Henderson? What happened? And then he comes out that night and he scores 39 points. Did you show him a clip of that? Was that you?
Yeah, it was all me. That was an incredible, incredible performance. It was just like, yo, he didn't miss. He didn't miss.
And an 18 point loss.
Hey, Tamani and Scoot Henderson had career highs in the same game. I can't speak for the rest of the team, but it's just, you know, Scoot Henderson, it was good to see that from Scoot. It was just
39 points, more points than he had in the prior four games combined.
Well, I would put it a different way, is that it was the youngest player in Blazers franchise history to have 39 in a game. So Damian Lillard's pretty good. Clyde Drexler's pretty good. They've had some really good players come through that franchise. And for Scoot Henderson to be youngest to put up 39, you know, I wanted to see it continue. I think we would all like to see it continue. If he has a legit 3-point shot, that's a game changer, just like any young point guard. And I would remind people, he's 20 years old. So we'll see what happens.
Yep. Just a kid still, but a lot of reason for concern with Scoot. I'm rooting for him, though. He's a good kid, works hard, and Blazers need him to pan out. They really need him to pan out. Tom, hope you have a great weekend, man. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm always pumped and jacked to be here. And do you think I should keep that bedroom warm for Steph Curry or no? No? You
don't think so? Don't do it. No.
Okay. No. All right.
Maybe Houston, somewhere else. San Antonio, somewhere in Texas. Send him there if he moves.
Jokic and Steph, once he wrote that, man, I was just
it'd be so beautiful. So beautiful. Yeah. It really would be. That'd be glorious. Tom, thank you, man. Thanks to Emmy, Mike, and Brett for producing today's episode of The Kevin O'Connor Show. Please subscribe if you have not done so already. Hope you have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back again next week.
The Warriors are now 16-7 when Buddy Hield scores double digits.
Oh, wow.
And they're 4-12 when he does not. Like, the fact that you're living and dying with Buddy Hield should be all you need to know.
Yeah, I know. Sad.
What do you think it's happening there?
I don't think he's going to ask for a trade. I don't. I also, the one thing, one name I did not mention in the article, maybe I should have, you could argue, but I didn't intentionally, was the Lakers. Like, they are the front office. And so it's like, when I reference the front office, it's really just about the Lakers. And I think every Warriors fan knows that at this point. But my gut feeling is that they want Steph to ask out. That's not based it's not based on anything to do with conversations with people. I just reading the situation, all of their actions indicate like we don't want to win again. We've been paying out the ass. Like, let's save some money now. Let's tank. Go get Cooper. Go get DeBansa next year. Like, we want to tank for a little while and be bad for a bit, and then build it back up again. Because I think the KG Pierce parallel that I mentioned is really like that's the formula. Trade your stars early. Don't let them retire into nothing. You got to get something back when you still can.
OKC, right? OKC's find your Shea Gilgeous Alexander. Find who's going to take Paul George. And
could you imagine the Steph deal? Like, how many picks is Houston giving up today? Or San Antonio? Or Orlando? Orlando has all of their future picks. If Orlando had an opportunity to get Stephen Curry today, they're giving up everything. All of it. Right? I would think.
All of it.
I would think so.
The business side is clamoring. Can you imagine, not even just like Jamal Mosley or whoever's in a GM position being like, yeah, Steph Curry makes a lot of sense here. Everybody on the business side is like, yeah, give up the farm, whatever it takes. We're bringing Steph Curry in here, you know? Mm-hmm.